Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we'll be opening with some top national news stories, starting with reactions from local elected officials to the conviction of former President Donald Trump on 34 felony counts, including some officials who believe that justice was done, as well as a local mayor who led a rally denouncing the verdict. Then, on our Capitol report, we'll have details on a bill to protect women's access to birth control that was blocked by Senate Republicans. Find out where your members of Congress stand on protecting your right to make family planning decisions. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have some more national stories, including President Joe Biden warning of threats to democracy during the 80th anniversary of D-Day in Europe, a top Trump advisor sentenced to prison, the latest delay tactics in the Georgia election interference case, and efforts to ease campus tensions over the Israel-Hamas war protests. In local news, hear about grant funds approved for fire-safe councils across our region. El Cajon is holding four town halls on a proposal to extend the half-cent sales tax approved by voters under Proposition J, which expires soon, posing financial challenges for the city unless voters approve a new measure. Scammers are targeting SDG&E customers with threats to shut off power if they're not paid promptly. This is a sophisticated scam that has duped many unsuspecting residents with costly results, so be sure to stay tuned to hear how to tell real SDG&E contacts from imposters. San Diego County Libraries are holding a summer reading program complete with prizes for participants. On Crime Beat, hear about a suspect arrested after a crime spree in El Cajon that included assaulting and injuring an elderly woman. Cal Fire has issued a no-burn proclamation due to high fire danger. Two wildfires this past week in Potrero and Otay Mountains serve as reminders that fire season has begun and the importance of creating defensible space around your home. On Destination East County, we'll have some sizzling summer events coming up, including La Mesa's Flag Day Parade, a star party in Julian, a Renaissance experience in Santee, Bathhouse Bazaar concerts in Jacamba Hot Springs, Viejas concerts in the park, a twilight walk at Mission Trails, a comedy night in La Mesa, outdoor concerts in all four East County cities, plus classic car shows and more. Today, we'll also re-air one of our Best of East County episodes, an interview with Dick Panic on the colorful history of the railway in our region. On Green Scene, learn about California's efforts to preserve coastal waters. Then on Ready, Set, Grow, Master Gardener Connie Beck will share words of wisdom on mulch for your garden. Plus, hear how you can report potholes and other problems through the county's Tell Us Now app. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Local officials are speaking after a New York State jury convicted former President Donald Trump of 34 felony crimes. The jurors found that Trump falsified business records to pay hush money to a porn star in order to prevent voters from learning of his alleged affair. Reactions split down party lines among local representatives, with Republicans criticizing the justice system and Democrats praising jurors' actions. Congressman Juan Vargas, a Democrat, says no one is above the law, not even former President Donald Trump. Vargas adds that a jury unanimously concluded that he broke the law for his own personal gain. This verdict is another step towards accountability and justice. In El Cajon, Republican Mayor Bill Wells, also a candidate for Congress, held what he calls a Save Our Democracy rally, at which he denounced the verdicts. He told the several dozen people present, "Americans know that a dark time has fallen over the nation and that none of us is safe. We are all potential felons if it is convenient for the people in power." Members Phil Ortiz and Steve Goebel also spoke at the rally organized by Wells. But Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, whom Wells is running against, states, "Justice is served." Ironically, while Mayor Wells sees a threat to democracy in Trump's conviction, others view the convictions as affirmations that our system of justice is working, protecting our democracy from a man who sought to win the presidency under false pretenses, covering up allegations by porn star Stormy Daniels of actions that many voters would consider immoral. Others say that if there's any subversion of democracy, it's been by Trump-appointed judges in Florida and on the Supreme Court who have delayed two federal trials, the classified documents case and the election interference case, that now likely won't take place until after the election, if ever. Congressman Mike Levin, a Democrat, says of the New York verdict, "The jury's decision reaffirmed that no one is above the law, not even a former president. Now is the time to close the door on this sordid chapter and move forward to address the challenges we all face in creating a more just and equitable nation." But Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican, called the trial and verdicts a disgrace. He claimed, without evidence, Democrats weaponize the law and manipulate the courts to go after Republicans and conservatives. Biden won the last election in his basement. I'll vote for Trump even if he's in a jail cell. Fact check. Trump was convicted in state court, so the federal government has no jurisdiction over New York's actions. While there are federal charges pending against Trump, those were filed by a special prosecutor separate from the Justice Department. Nor has Biden sought to interfere with actions of the Justice Department, which is currently prosecuting Biden's own son, Hunter Biden, on a decades-old weapons charge. Others have claimed that Trump jurors were biased, even though all 12 jurors, plus 23 grand jurors, found evidence that Trump committed felony crimes, including jurors who described themselves as Trump supporters and jurors who said their news sources include conservative sources such as Fox News and Trump's Truth Social media outlet. Congressman Scott Peters, the fourth Democrat among San Diego's five-member congressional delegation, concludes, "This was a fair process and our legal system worked as intended. A jury of Mr. Trump's peers listened to the evidence and found him guilty on all charges. That's how the justice system is supposed to work. We should thank jurors for their service and the judge for his patience." Carol Lam, former U.S. attorney for California's Southern District in San Diego, offers this legal perspective. "This is a state conviction for a crime, just like hundreds of thousands of state criminal convictions have been obtained throughout history. That's what's remarkable about this, that a man who has held the position of president and may do so again has gone through the same process of criminal prosecution that thousands and thousands of people go through every year and has been held accountable after a criminal trial by a jury of his peers." Sentencing for the former president is slated for July 11th, 3 days before the Republican National Convention, at which he is expected to be formally nominated as the party's candidate for president in the November election. The Republican National Committee is reportedly preparing contingency plans for Trump to deliver his convention speech by video from behind bars if Judge Juan Merchan sentences Trump to serve time in prison. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. After Republicans in multiple states introduced measures to restrict women's access to birth control, Democrats in Congress tried to enact the Right to Contraception Act, which would have protected birth control access nationwide. But Senate Republicans blocked the measure. Only two Republicans, both women, voted to protect birth control access. Although 14 states, including California, currently protect birth control access in their state constitutions or by state law, if Republicans retake control of Congress and the presidency, they could pass a nationwide law outlawing some forms of birth control. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a Democrat from San Diego whose district includes parts of East County, voiced outrage at her colleague's action. She posted on social media, I went on birth control in high school for debilitating cramps. I've used Plan B. I have an IUD. Birth control is health care for me and millions of others, and we deserve the right to access it. And she added, Senate Republicans blocked this right. Just one more reason to vote them out. The measure killed by Senate Republicans addressed only contraception and did not include abortion. Congressman Daryl Issa, an East County conservative Republican, previously voted no on a similar House measure, although that one did include protections for early-stage abortions. His stance against birth control access, however, is nothing new. When Issa chaired a congressional panel on contraception back in 2012, he drew outrage by refusing to allow any women to testify. Slate reported, of the five witnesses called to testify in the first round, all five were men who opposed contraception. ABC News confirmed that the hearing Issa chaired sparked protests and a walkout by some women members of Congress. Senator Patty Murray warned at the time, there is nothing new about these Republican attacks on our family planning decisions. In fact, from the moment they came into power, Republicans in the House of Representatives have been waging a war on women's health, and now in the Senate as well. Senator Katie Britt, an Alabama Republican who voted against protecting birth control access this week, slammed Democrats for what she called scare tactics. But it's a fact that Republicans have stepped up their attacks on birth control access since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, kicking abortion regulation back to the states, and many states have since outlawed nearly all abortions, and some have also blocked or restricted access to medication used to induce early-stage abortions, which are also used to treat women suffering miscarriages. Now, Republicans in some states are also trying to outlaw some forms of birth control. In Missouri, the GOP tried to restrict access to the morning-after pill commonly used by rape victims to prevent a fertilized egg from implanting in the uterus. In Idaho, hearings are planned to possibly ban IUDs, intrauterine devices, and emergency contraception. And in Louisiana, a House committee passed a bill that declares life begins at conception, which could outlaw IUDs, Plan B medications, and possibly other forms of birth control that prevent unwanted pregnancies. The bill, blocked by Republican legislators in the U.S. Senate, would have guaranteed women access to birth control, such as IUDs, birth control pills, and the morning-after pill. Senate Democrats plan to continue their efforts to force Republicans to vote on reproductive rights issues. Next up, the Democrats say they plan to introduce a bill to protect in vitro fertilization, which one southern state outlawed, since not all fertilized embryos are carried to term. It remains to be seen whether Republicans will also oppose protections for IVF, a popular alternative for couples unable to have children on their own. The Republicans' actions come despite numerous polls showing nearly all Americans support access to birth control, and the vast majority also support abortion access. A 2022 poll by 538 and Ipsos found that well above 90% of Americans, including over 90% of Republicans, support access to birth control pills and condoms. Over 80% say they support access to IUDs, including over 80% of Republicans. And over 80% support access to emergency contraception such as Plan B, including over 60% of Republicans. Now, the partisan divide does become apparent on access to medication, abortions, and abortion pills, still backed by well over 80% of Americans, but less than 40% of Republicans. And as for surgical abortions, 80% of Americans support access, but just over 30% of Republicans favor access to surgical abortions. Presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump said earlier this year that he was open to considering birth control restrictions. But he later said he would not back an outright ban on birth control, leaving open the door that he may sign restrictions on some forms of birth control if elected in November. President Joe Biden issued this far more definitive statement. Senate Republicans just refused to protect a woman's right to birth control, the president said. This is the second time since the Supreme Court's extreme decision to overturn Roe v. Wade that congressional Republicans have refused to safeguard this fundamental right for women in every state. It's unacceptable, Biden concluded. Women voters will need to decide whether to prioritize protecting their family planning rights or whether to risk a rollback to birth control prohibitions of a century ago when they head to the polls in November. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We know the dark forces that these heroes fought against 80 years ago. They never fade. Aggression and greed, the desire to dominate and control, to change borders by force, these are perennial. The struggle between a dictatorship and freedom is unending.
President Joe Biden speaking to veterans at Normandy on the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Along with the day's historical significance, Biden compared that fight to struggles for freedom now, specifically the Ukraine-Russia war. Polls show most Americans support Ukraine reclaiming its territory, even if that takes continued U.S. support. Meanwhile, Steve Bannon, strategist to former President Donald Trump, must report to prison for a four-month contempt of Congress sentence after refusing to testify at the January 6th committee. He says Trump's conviction and verdicts against him and other Trump allies will not stop the MAGA movement.
We're going to win this. We're going to win at the Supreme Court. And more importantly, we're going to win on November 5th in an amazing landslide with the Senate, the House, and also Donald J. Trump back as President of the United States.
The case against Trump for interfering with 2020 election results in Georgia is delayed as an appeals court considers disqualifying Fulton County District Attorney Fawnie Willis. She's come under strict scrutiny after it emerged she and a prosecutor she had appointed were having an affair. The trial was set for mid-August, but looks unlikely before the election. At a Senate hearing on challenges to reproductive health care access, Washington Democratic Senator Patty Murray described hardships women have faced since Roe was overturned.
Stories of women denied care for a miscarriage because of abortion bans. Women turned away from hospitals because their doctors' hands were tied.
A college group is working to bridge the divide between Arabs and Jews at a tense time on campus. Atidna International is creating discussion space at the University of Texas at Austin, the University of Pennsylvania, Harvard University, and William College. Founder Elijah Kallenberg says that's difficult given the often violent history of Israel and Palestine, but is especially important now.
There's a lot of course, disagreement. Both sides are not going to agree about everything. But we also see a lot of unlikely agreement through a conversation. Both the Jews and Arabs begin to see that they are more similar to each other than to anyone else. And that breaks down a world of hate when you can solidify that through a dialogue.
Kallenberg leads the group with fellow UT Austin student Jad Hashem. A guiding phrase at Atidna is cousins, not enemies. And Hashem says that's because Arabs and Jews have a shared history.
Both of our peoples often come from Canaanites, Israelites, etc. And so to divide us by any means, I think, is actually somewhat of a disgrace because of how closely related we are.
After initially sounding positive about a hostages for ceasefire deal unveiled by Biden, both Hamas and the right-wing-led Israeli government are now criticizing it. Some observers note they both have internal political reasons for dragging out the war in Gaza. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The San Diego Regional Fire Foundation has announced funding for 24 fire-safe councils locally, with grants totaling $250,000 to aid in wildfire prevention and preparedness, including community education to make neighborhoods safer. The announcement was made during the Fire Safe Council of San Diego County's 17th Annual Volunteer Awards Ceremony, which recognized some outstanding individuals and agencies for their contributions to fostering fire-safe and resilient communities. FireSafe Councils are community-led, volunteer-based organizations dedicated to protecting homes and communities from wildfires. The councils support their communities through various activities, including fire-hardening homes, removing flammable plantings, hosting vegetation shipping events, installing reflective address signage, and educating and assisting neighbors with emergency preparedness. Ann Baldridge, Vice President of the FireSafe Council of San Diego County, said, "We support the operations of 41 community fire safe councils in San Diego County and are delighted to celebrate these organizations and their incredible volunteers by acknowledging their efforts through the following volunteer awards and grants. For 2024, the Julian Fire Safe Council was named the outstanding fire safe council in our region. Cal Fire and San Diego County Fire Captain Thomas Schutz was named outstanding educator for his community risk reduction efforts. The Volunteer of the Year is Sarah Lifton with the Olivenhane Fire Safe Council, and the Innovation Award was presented to the University City Fire Safe Council. Joan Jones, Executive Director of the San Diego Regional Fire Foundation, says, "We are proud to help fund the Fire Safe Council's fire preparedness efforts. without which our communities and residents would be at greater danger from the devastating impact of wildfires. For 35 years, the San Diego Regional Fire Foundation has been the only fire foundation supporting all of San Diego County with help from donors including the San Diego River Conservancy, San Diego Gas and Electric, and the Fire Safe Council of San Diego County. These are the Fire Safe Councils that are receiving grant awards from the San Diego County Regional Fire Foundation. Alpine/Viejas, Alvarado Estates, Campo Lake Morena, Chula Vista, Crest, Cuyamaca Woods, Eucalyptus Hills, Fallbrook, Jamul, Julian, Kensington, Lakeside and the San Diego Audubon Society, Los Tuiles at Warner Springs, Mount Laguna, Olivenhane, Palomar Mountain, Potrero Tecate, Poway, Ramona West End, Real East County, Southwest Escondido, University City, Via Crest, and Wainola Estates. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The City of El Cajon's special sales tax measure, Proposition J, is set to expire, and voters may soon be asked whether to approve extending the half-cent sales tax in the future. The city invites residents to 4 town halls to learn about the services provided through the half-cent sales tax and what services may have to be cut if the funding source is not continued. Each town hall will include an interactive budgeting activity that will provide vital feedback to city leaders. The town halls scheduled are June 13th at 6 p.m. at Bostonia Recreation Center, June 15th at 1 p.m. in the Ronald Reagan Community Center, June 18th at 6 p.m. in the Kennedy Recreation Center, and June 20th at 6 p.m. at Hillsdale Recreation Center. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Now it's time for East County Magazine's Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers Report, shining a light on shady deals all around us. This is Miriam Raftery with a warning about a new scam targeting customers of San Diego Gas and Electric Company. To protect customers, SDG&E is alerting them to a recently documented text message utility scam trying to defraud local utility customers. The scheme attempts to exploit SDG&E's legitimate use of text messages and email notifications to inform residential customers of work orders like meter changes, meter reads, and testing. There is an important distinction between a fraudulent and a legitimate customer communication. The fraudster will route the customer to a fake 1-800 phone number. Legitimate SDG&E texts will always point the customer to SDG&E's main customer care center. That number is 1-800-411-7343. And when in doubt, just hang up and call SDG&E back at the number that's listed on SDG&E's webpage, sdge.com. Here's how the scam unfolds. It starts with a text message that includes an SDG&E logo and says that there's an immediate work order to disconnect power at the address on file. The scammer asks the customer to call a scammer-run call center to confirm the work order. When the customer places the call, they briefly hear a recorded message. Welcome to the SDG&E call center. You are the first in the queue. After hold music, a live fraudster attempts to demand immediate payment to stop the power from being disconnected. Targeted customers are then asked to pay in non-traceable Bitcoin, Zelle, Green Dot, debit cards, or other non-traditional forms of payment that SDG&E does not use. Compounding the loss, targets are repeatedly told the payment did not go through and they may unwittingly repeat the financial transaction. Victims are told to keep trying because any amount overpaid will just result in an expedited refund. The losses can be staggering. Those most prone to fraud include restaurant owners, small businesses, homeowner associations, older adults, and limited English speakers. Fraudsters prey on victims whose livelihood depends on a consistent source of electricity. For example, the fraudsters have been known to call restaurateurs just before the lunch hour to add pressure. The owner, experiencing the noontime rush, complies with the fraudulent demand for payment all too often. Now remember these tips to avoid becoming a victim. SDG&E will never call to demand immediate payment made over the phone with the threat of an immediate service disconnection. SDG&E will never accept any payment over the phone, so anybody requesting payment over the phone is an imposter. The only utility bill payment options are My Account, a branch office location, or an authorized payment location. SDG&E does not accept prepaid cash cards, Zelle, Green Dot, or Bitcoin for bill payments. The utility company will never demand cash in person. Never provide your utility bill information to anyone you do not know. Never give anyone your online utility login credentials. Do not use the callback number provided by an unknown caller. Always find the official contact information from verified sources, such as SDG&E's website, as we mentioned. Do have a conversation about utility scams with older family members and friends to ensure that they do not fall victim. And don't forget, you can always check your bill and payment history at sdge.com/myaccount. For more information about scams, you can visit sdge.com/scams.
This is John Tidwell with a public service announcement from San Diego County Library. Do you or your children like to read, learn, and earn prizes? This summer, you can do all three. The County Library Summer Learning Challenge is back. This summer's challenge runs now through August 31st. Register online or at any of the 33 county libraries, read some books, have some fun, engage in some new activities, and you could just earn a prize, from achievement badges to a new book or your choice of a library tote bag. The summer challenge is open to people of all ages, but its main goal is to encourage kids and teens to read during their summer vacations. That can help prevent what some educators call the summer slide, where students can lose some of what they achieved during the school year. Taking part is easy. Just come into your local library to register or do it online. First, pick up a printed learning log in any of the 8 languages at a county library branch, or print one out at home to track your progress. Then, over the 3-month challenge, track what you read and mark the activities you complete in the log to win prizes. Activities can include answering questions, submitting a drawing, or trying out a new recipe. You can win achievement badges by completing educational activities, reading books, spending hours reading, submitting book reviews, or a combination of those. You don't even have to come into the library to check out books or read, since the county's e-book collection is available to everyone using your library card through the library's online OverDrive platform or by downloading the Libby app and connecting to the library. If you don't already have a county library card, you can do that online or at a branch just by using your cell phone number. To sign up for the Summer Learning Challenge, drop into any county library branch or visit the San Diego County Library site, sdcl.org/summer.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. El Cajon police have arrested a parolee with multiple prior arrests for a violent drug-induced crime spree on May 29th that allegedly included, in their words, terrorizing and injuring an elderly woman, according to Lieutenant Keith MacArthur. 42-year-old Tony Sims reportedly knocked on the door of a motel room where the elderly woman was staying, then forced his way inside when she opened the door. He allegedly grabbed her and pushed her down, causing significant injuries, then vandalized the room and destroyed the television. The suspect then ran from the motel to a fast food restaurant where he jumped through the drive-through window and stole a knife from the kitchen. He then fled to a grocery store nearby where he allegedly threatened another person with the knife, witnesses told police, though officers were unable to find that second victim. Police did find Sims hiding in bushes outside. He was arrested and determined by officers to be under the influence of drugs. The suspect, who is reportedly homeless, is facing charges of elder abuse, burglary, vandalism, and drug intoxication. Sims has had multiple prior arrests, most recently in March, and was on probation at the time of his latest arrest. After another wet winter, warming temperatures and winds are quickly drying out grass and brush. The increasing fire danger posed by the high volume of dead grass and hotter, drier conditions in the region has prompted CAL FIRE to suspend all burn permits for outdoor residential burning within the state responsibility area of San Diego County. This suspension takes effect at 8 a.m. June 1st and suspends all residential outdoor burning of landscape debris such as branches and leaves. Fire Chief Tony Meacham says this measure is essential to safeguard our communities and resources during this heightened period of danger. Since January 1st, CAL FIRE and firefighters across the state have already responded to over 1,250 wildfires. CAL FIRE is asking residents to be prepared for wildfires by maintaining a minimum of 100 feet of defensible space around each home and building on their property, and being prepared to evacuate if needed. After clearing dead or dying vegetation, landscape with fire-resistant plants and non-flammable ground covering. Instead of burning, you can dispose of landscape debris through chipping or hauling to a biomass, energy, or green waste facility. For more information on how to create defensible space, on how to be prepared for wildfires, as well as tips to prevent them, you can visit alertsandiego.org. This is Miriam Raftery on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. As summer heats up, East County has a lineup of sizzling hot events in mid to late June, including La Mesa's Flag Day Parade, a star party in Julian, a Renaissance experience in Santee, Bathhouse Bazaar concerts in Hucumba Hot Springs, Viejas concerts in the park, a twilight walk at Mission Trails Regional Park, a comedy night in La Mesa, outdoor concerts in Santee, La Mesa, El Cajon, and Lemon Grove, and La Mesa's classic car shows. La Mesa salutes Old Glory at the annual Flag Day Parade on Saturday, June 8th. The parade starts at 10 a.m. and travels west through the La Mesa Village along La Mesa Boulevard. Former City Councilwoman Ruth Sterling will serve as Grand Marshal. Ice cream will be available through the La Mesa Community Relations and Veterans Commission at the Lookout in Legacy Park at the corner of La Mesa Boulevard, 4th Street, and Allison Avenue. The parade is organized by the City of La Mesa and La Mesa Village Association. The Julian Dark Sky Network invites you to a star party Saturday, June 8th, starting at 8 p.m. at the Desert View Park Inspiration Point, 2 miles south of Julian off Highway 79. Bring binoculars and cameras or use telescopes provided for people of all ages to view the cosmos, including deep nebula, star clusters in the Milky Way, and a crescent moon. Be sure to dress warmly for this event. You can learn more at juliandarkskynetwork.com. Step back in time at the Santee Renaissance Experience June 15th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The event, held at 9000 Edgemoor Drive in Santee, will feature real medieval-style battles, multiple guilds to entertain and educate you, plus pirates, fairies, mermaids, and a madrigal choir. You can also try your hand at archery, shop for crafts and wares, enjoy exotic food vendors, and a beer garden. The event is sponsored by the Kiwanis Club of Santee and the Kingdom of Terra Nuove in collaboration with San Diego County and the City of Santee. The ticket link is too long to read on the air, but you can find it on our website at eastcountymagazine.org on our calendar. Viejas Concerts in the Park have several shows coming up in the last half of June, including country music artist Terry Clark on June 14th, Banda El Recuerdo on June 21st, Noche Latina June 22nd, and the American Patriot Tour with Aaron Lewis on June 23rd. For tickets and details, visit viejas.com. Mission Trails Regional Park Trail Guides will lead a summer twilight walk on Saturday, June 15th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Enjoy an evening walk in the park and learn about changes that occur at dusk as the sun goes down. Walks meet at the parking lot at the corner of Bushy Hill Drive and Father Junipero Serra Trail across from Kumeyaay Lake Campground. Bring a flashlight and an extra layer of clothing, since it often cools down after the sun sets. For more information, visit mtrp.org/events. That's the Mission Trails Regional Park website. A highlight of those hot summer nights in Hucumba Hot Springs is a concert series at the Bathhouse Bazaar. June's lineup includes the Clinton Davis String Band on June 8th with folk, hillbilly, jug band, and ballads. This Lonesome Paradise performing cowboy noir music on June 21st and Nick Pagan's New Wop on June 22nd. All concerts are from 8 p.m. to 11. There is no admission charge, but RSVPs are requested. You can read more at hucumba.com.
Sequan Casino and Resort offers a unique way to view a concert this summer, including the multi-platinum selling band Platinum on June 21st at 8 p.m. The band will perform at the Faux River flowing through the resort, where VIP package options include reserved seats on the retreat viewing deck, exclusive server, and two pool floaties. The concert is limited to age 21 and up. Lanco hits include Greatest Love Story, Born to Love You, Honky Tonk Hippies, What I See, and Leaving Looks Good on You. For tickets, visit Sequan.com. Comedians Gene Levine and Carol Johnson are the dynamic duo behind the Fourth Friday comedy show held every month at Space Bar Cafe and Wine Bistro in La Mesa. This delightful event has become one of the longest-running comedy shows in our region, drawing laughter-loving audiences from near and far. The next comedy night is Friday, June 26th, from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Space Bar's website is at spacebar.com. Santee's Summer Concert Series will be held Thursday, starting June 13th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at 550 Park Center Drive in Santee. June's performers include Cassie B., Upstream, and Journeyman. Learn more at the City of Santee's website. The 30th Annual La Mesa Classic Car Show and Live Music event rolls into downtown La Mesa starting June 6th through August 29th, every Thursday starting at 5 p.m., except not June 13th or July 4th. Visitors can stroll La Mesa Boulevard between 4th and Spring Streets to view classic cars and other vintage vehicles, as well as enjoy live music by local bands and DJs. For this 30th anniversary year, there will also be theme nights once a month, with attendees encouraged to dress up in the style of the bands performing. June's entertainment lineup includes Blame Betty on June 20th, Zealand on June 27th, and a theme night June 20th with a rockabilly theme. El Cajon's Concerts in the Park series continues every Friday night all summer long from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade. There are also Cajon Classic Cruise car shows each Wednesday night from 5 to 7:30 at the same location. You can find a full schedule of each week's themes and entertainers at downtownelcajon.com. La Mesa's Concerts in the Park will be held in the amphitheater at Harry Griffin Park on Sundays from 6 to 7 p.m. starting June 23rd and running through July 28th. The lineup includes the San Diego Concert Band, That Beatles Over Band, Driving the Bus, Zealand, 8-Track Highway, and Sonic Epidemic. For details, visit lamesaparks.org. Lemon Grove will host three concerts in the park this summer at Berry Street Park from 6:30 to 8 p.m. The June 27th season opener will feature the Bayou Brothers with Cajun and Zydeco music. Get details at lemongrove.ca.gov/parks-events. You can find all of these events and more on eastcountymagazine.org, in our calendar, and in our Festivals of the Month section. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. Next up, we're going to play one of our Best of East County episodes from our Sounds of History segment.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. Today, we are resuming our conversation with Richard Penick, the former president and CEO, founding member, and now the media coordinator of the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association. Dick Penick, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, good morning, Helen. I'm glad to be here again with you. It's certainly my pleasure.
Last time, we learned about the size and operations of the Railway Museum. Our listeners can actually Google Pacific Southwest Railway, some variation of those words, and find you. But what's the main phone number?
The main phone number is area code 619-465-PSRM. That's 7776 on the dial.
I'm going to repeat that. It's 619-465-7776. Gosh, that's patriotic.
It is.
Sounds like the American Revolution. And it sounds like it was all the way out in Campo. You really have written the book on how to restore old trains and make them accessible to the public. Now, perhaps your most famous operation is that living history component, those weekend train rides at Campo. You are there as a conductor and locomotive engineer in full regalia, I might add. How much is a ticket, and do you still travel from Campo to Tecate?
We have weekend-only trains. We recommend that people check our website, psrm.org, to make sure of the schedule before they make the drive out there. It is a long way from San Diego, but certainly we feel it's worth the ride. We do not currently go to Tecate, and the reason is there is a railroad tunnel just over the international border on the Mexican side that burned and collapsed Christmas Day 2009. And since that time, the tunnel has not been repaired, and our monthly trips to Tecate had to be temporarily curtailed. So currently, we confine all of our operations and our special activities to the U.S. side of the border, between the border and Campo.
Why is the Campo train ride sometimes called the Polar Express?
Well, like all nonprofits, we do need to protect our bottom line, and we have many public activities, special activities during the year. The biggest one being our Santa train in the Christmas season. The first train runs the day after Thanksgiving, and we run 12 to 15 of those on consecutive weekends through the Christmas season. It is extremely popular, sold out every year, and as a matter of fact, Helen, members can buy their tickets for it right now.
Wonderful. Parents out there, get ready. Richard, at the dawn of the railroad, nobody had a union. There were no OSHA rules, occupational safety and health. So what were some of the dangers to, say, a brakeman on the railroad or another worker?
Interesting you ask about the brakeman, because on the railroad, particularly in the early days, that was one of the most dangerous occupations in train service. Now, even then, as now, you could get a job on the railroad in the office and never have to worry about ice and snow and sleet and storm. But the brakeman's job, before the days of air brakes, required that the brakeman, and they were all men in those days, had to ride the tops of the freight cars on a freight train in all weather, and they lost many of them in service, so there was generally always a job available, a job opening for brakemen, because the turnover was pretty high. It was a very hazardous occupation. Now, the passenger brakeman had it a little easier. He rode inside the passenger coaches, normally with a conductor, so that wasn't quite so bad. But the freight brakeman on the freight trains, pretty horrible job.
Now, when people were riding the rails, which is the subject of poetry and song and folk music and all of the lore of the 1930s, really, what was that like for somebody to ride the rails? Where are you?
You mean like a hobo?
Yes.
Well,
In a word.
There were two different types of illegal rail riders, hobos and bums. Bums in those days had the same connotation it has today. Hobos sometimes were of a different cut. Sometimes they were riding the train illegally, but sort of looked the other way officially, because they were searching for work. They were moving from one workplace, one seasonal workplace possibly, to another, and many of the railroads often cut them a little slack and would not necessarily kick them off. They were all lumped under the term hobo, but there were differences. The bums often spent their evenings in jail when they were caught, whereas the hobos were, if you can say, maybe a somewhat higher echelon of itinerant society, shall we say.
Dick, the classic movie image is of a group of hobos. These are lonely guys in felt hats who go and offer to chop wood for a sandwich. They're all together in an empty freight car. They jump off at different points. Are we saying the wino, some poor tragic guy, is literally under that freight car? If we're riding the rails, we're so close to the rails, we're almost on them. Is that what that phrase means? It's a scary thing.
Well, not necessarily, but certainly there have been a lot of fatalities by bums, winos, others that aren't supposed to be on the property, going to sleep in a drunken stupor on a railroad track, which can be a very fatal exercise. And it happens often on the Mexican side of the border, particularly at night. It even happens on the U.S. side. It's an unfortunate part of railroad operation. There are people that don't watch the crossing signs when they're crossing railroad tracks in their car or on foot. And in spite of all the warning signs and all of the measures the railroads try to take to promote safety, there are still tragedies.
Exactly. Richard, you have been intimately involved with railroads for all of your life, long ago and far away. as a carefree, wind-in-your-hair young man. Didn't you ride the rails? Have you had personal experience?
I did, and I do. Even in my senior years, I continue to have experiences that I cherish very highly. I will tell you that I have never had professional railroad experience. I get asked that question a lot. But I did try to get a job with the railroad in Oakland, California, back in the mid-1950s, right after I got out of high school, because I wanted to become a fireman on a steam locomotive. And unfortunately, the railroad was getting rid of its steam locomotives at the time, and they wrote me back a Dear John letter saying, well, we're sorry, but we've laid off most of our firemen because we don't have a need for them anymore. And I always look back on those days and wonder if, should I have continued with trying to get a railroad career.
Were you hand-firing a coal-burning?
No, that was on an oil-burning locomotive. It would have been had I got the job. But I had that opportunity many years later when we founded the museum. But you asked about some other adventures that I have had over the years, and those have been many, particularly with regard to trains. And I had one, and I have to tell you up front, Helen, that this was strictly illegal. Do not encourage anybody to do this. It is strictly forbidden and against the law. But I was a young, headstrong, adventurous kid in those days, and I and others decided to hop a freight train on the railroad that we currently operate on, and we were going to take this ride through Carrizo Gorge and just have a ball. So we encamped ourselves on a flat car in a freight train, and we were coming back from El Centro in late afternoon, and there are 17 tunnels just in the 11 miles of the Carrizo Gorge section, and the first tunnel is protected by an overhead structure called a telltale. Basically, it's just a wooden framework with ropes with knots on the end of them hanging down about 3 feet below the top of this gantry. And it's designed to warn a trainman on top of a car that there's a tunnel or limited head clearance coming up. So should they be facing the wrong way, it warns them that you better duck because there's something coming up that might take the upper part of your torso off. So I was facing the wrong way when we were coming up to the first tunnel and enjoying the view and the fresh air in my hair, and all of a sudden this telltale hit me in the back, and I immediately flattened on top of the car, and had I not done so, the tunnel was coming up in about an eighth of a mile, and I would have been a dead person. So it was
Richard, very hazardous. Thank you for sharing that. And dear listeners, this does fall under the heading of don't try this at home, unless you are the body double for Sean Connery. I think we've all seen somebody or Steve McQueen fall to the roof and suddenly there's a tunnel and the audience is aghast. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Helen.
Dick Penick, this has been a wonderful conversation. I want to thank you for stopping by and sharing the lore, some of the lore. There's obviously much more from the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. We didn't even get into the archives, and I know you have a big, big archive of precious material. Thank you, listeners, for tuning into the Sounds of History. I'm Helen O'Field.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The public comment period is now open on California's new framework for deciding which managed areas within coastal waters meet the definition of conserved and where protection improvements need to be made. California's goal is to preserve 30% of state lands and waters by the year 2030. The Ocean Protection Council released science-based guidelines this week on what counts as conserved. Joss Hill is project director at the Pew Charitable Trusts.
An area is considered a conservation area if the lands and coastal waters are durably protected and managed to sustain functional ecosystems, both intact and restored, and the diversity of life that they support.
P. people can weigh in on the process at a series of upcoming workshops in Arcata, Monterey, and San Diego. The Ocean Protection Council will also hold two webinars this summer and will accept feedback by email. Hill says the new framework will be used by the state to evaluate protections in marine-managed areas. The state's 30 by 30 policy sets goals to improve biodiversity, public access, and climate resilience.
The stakes of failing to protect nature are high, and the loss of biodiversity undermines the ability of ecosystems to function and support a healthy environment. And this is particularly important in a changing climate, in which loss of biodiversity reduces nature's resilience to change.
The evaluation criteria will be finalized in the fall, and the preliminary decision on which places qualify as conservation areas will be presented in December. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
That's the sound of brush being cleared right outside my window. Fire season has begun as the weather warms up and brush across the backcountry dries out. A fire on Otay Mountain burned 400 acres on both sides of the international border this week, and it took 3 days for firefighters to extinguish the blaze. Fortunately, no homes were lost. In Potrero's Bell Valley, firefighters are crediting defensible space created by homeowners around their residences for saving two homes during the ranch fire. Fire officials warn that heavy rains this past winter have resulted in heavy growth, meaning more fuel to burn as grasses and other vegetation dries out. So be sure to clear defensible space around your home and have a plan to be ready for evacuation if necessary. You can sign up to receive East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts via email at eastcountymagazine.org. You can also follow East County Alert on X, formerly Twitter, and sign up for the county's Alert San Diego messages. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I love mulch. Mulch is one of my favorite words because of what it does for us. Here in Southern California, we desperately need mulch. If you've traveled abroad, you've gone to France, you've gone to England, and you've seen that back there, they use something called dust mulch. This is where they go in with a little cultivator and they rake up a little pile of loose soil on the soil surface, and they view that as mulching. And it works for them because it rains about every 30 minutes over there. But we're in Southern California, and our sun is hot, and it blazes down. First, the definition of mulch is, it's anything that you use as a barrier between the sun and the soil. And that's probably the number one wonderful aspect of mulch. It will make your plants much happier. They will grow better because they won't be going through a constant cycle of I'm wet, now I'm hot, now I'm dry, now I'm wet. So the mulch is the blanket that provides a much more serene landscape for your plants. They will be much happier without going through the constant wet, dry, wet, dry, wet, dry cycle. You will also find that it will help your water bill because the mulch will help you stretch out between waterings. When you change and start using 3 inches of mulch, yes, 3 inches of mulch on your plants, you will find that you don't need to water nearly so often. Plants that you had to water every third or fourth day may go a week very easily between waterings. That's certainly going to be helpful. But there are other things that mulch does too. I've seen those gardens in France and England because I love to travel. But when I come home, I have no interest in spending another month weeding. That's not my idea of fun at all. The mulch makes it so that I don't need to weed all the time. 3 inches of mulch means that very few weeds are going to come up. You can pull the ones that do come up very easily because they're wimpy and they have weak stems. You can do it just by bending over and jerking them out of the ground. Now, this does take a little work up front. If you have a half an acre of weeds right now, you have to get down to bare ground before you put the mulch on them. So you will need a hula hoe, and hopefully you can then rake up the stuff and make it go away, because it's going to be old dry weeds full of weed seeds. If you're doing this in the early part of the year when those weeds are still green, those make great compost additions for your compost barrel. Now, once you've got the bare ground, either around your existing garden or starting from scratch, put down 3 inches of mulch. The mulch can be either organic or inorganic. I personally do not care much for putting down weed barrier underneath things. When I put down mulch, I put it on the bare ground. People who are insecure about that could put down 4 to 6 layers of newspaper, and that would be good. Whatever you do, don't put down black plastic. Don't let anybody talk you into putting plastic underneath your mulch, because the black plastic is going to tear and the edges are going to come up. Soon, within 2 or 3 years, you will have these lovely pieces of black plastic floating around your landscape. This is not something that most of us want to see. What is the mulch? You can get leftover tree prunings. You can get leaves that you've run through a shredder. You can go buy wonderful mulch at either the Sycamore or the Miramar landfill. You can use whatever you have for mulch. You can also do inorganic mulches. You can put down half inch gravel. You can put down pea gravel. You can buy bark. There are so many choices that you can use. My favorite mulch of all time is called Gorilla Hair. Gorilla Hair is redwood that it's the leftovers from when they mill the redwood. And so it binds together beautifully. It's kind of a rusty color, which is why it has the name Gorilla Hair. And it lasts a long time. It's great for use on slopes. Try it. You'll like it.
If you live in the unincorporated areas of the county, you can report road repairs needed, drainage issues, traffic problems, missing or damaged road signs, and other non-emergency issues with San Diego County's Tell Us Now app. Just download the app from your app store, choose an area of interest, snap a quick picture, and add text with your smartphone, then send. The app can also be used to report code compliance issues, green pools that can breed mosquitoes, problems with pricing at gas pumps or scales at grocery stores, air quality concerns, and more in unincorporated areas of the county. The Tell Us Now app will alert county staff to check out the problem and get it fixed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.